Hello and welcome to the shadowy home of cryptids, ghosts, and other mysteries, known as Within the Mist Podcast. You are greeted by your hosts, Gary and Goldie Ann.
Hello, hi, Gary. I beat you to it.
I was not planning on that.
I know.
I kind of got used to, hi, Goldie Ann, how are you?
I know. You keep changing everything, so I thought I would too.
You did.
I did. And now for our first dad joke. I don't know any dad jokes, so never mind. Carry on.
Am I the lead in this story, or are you?
I don't know. I'm just trying to mix things up.
I feel like you took over.
I'm trying.
Oh, it's a coup over here. But first, a word from our sponsor. Welcome back. Goldie Ann, do you have a joke?
No.
Okay. Well, I did
I can
want...
look one up on the internet real quick.
Don't worry about it, because earlier today I had to go see the doctor. I kept getting a stabbing pain in my eye every time I drank coffee.
Yeah?
He asked me if I ever tried taking the spoon out of the cup first.
Well, he does know you.
Now, today's episode contains encounters with a being that roams within the tunnels beneath the feet of university students. Oh. These encounters may be frightening to some of our audience.
Or intriguing to others.
I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We are storytellers of cryptids, ghosts, and other mysteries. We don't intend to scare our listeners on purpose. Well, maybe just a little. Listener discretion is always advised. And with that, Goldie Ann, let me take you beneath the sprawling campus of the University of South Carolina, where there is a labyrinth of dark and winding tunnels. Some are relatively new and used for modern maintenance purposes.
That's cool.
In contrast, others are remnants of an older system designed to heat the campus with steam. But there is also an ancient network of tunnels dating as far back as the 1700s or older that are connecting the Longstreet Theater and the Laguerre Building. Then they even travel on to the city's state house and finally to an abandoned cotton warehouse down by the river.
So, is this like a labyrinth? Is it like a catacomb? Are there skeletons?
A catacomb would indicate that there are skeletons, and no, this isn't like the one in Paris. These were tunnels that were used for maintenance and heating the building, but they were also used for other purposes of moving people who didn't want to be seen, public, you know, figures and so forth. This could move them from the courthouse or the university to the river and back again, so they didn't have to deal with public or problems with the public.
Or no one would see them dump a dead body.
This is true too. And only you would go there.
Oh yeah.
Although the origins of these ancient tunnels remain shrouded in mystery and their builders and purposes are lost to time, the dark, winding pathways seem to stretch endlessly, leading to unknown depths and secrets waiting to be discovered. There are whispers of long-forgotten civilizations echoing through the cold stone walls, adding to the sense of intrigue and wonder surrounding these enigmatic structures. University students have been drawn to explore the winding tunnels for nearly a century. These forgotten passageways hold secrets and memories of a time long gone, waiting to be discovered by those brave enough to venture into their depths. And so, students continue to journey into their depths, eager to uncover its enigmas and unlock its hidden treasures.
That's cool.
Very cool. But there may be more to the tunnels than adolescent tests of courage. Because for decades, Stories have circulated amongst the university students and faculty about a mysterious being that can traverse the hidden tunnels and make it his home. These tales, dating back to the 1950s, tell of a creature said to be humanoid in appearance, but unlike any man you could imagine. Its presence is rumored to bring both fear and awe among those who encounter it. It is clad entirely in shimmering silver. This being's movements are rigid, yet seemingly capable of incredible speed and strength. There's a faint scent of raw chicken that seems to linger around him, adding to his hideous aura.
Gross.
But what is most shocking, and probably even more gross, is that he has unique facial features. A third eye. Piercing and unblinking, placed squarely in the middle of his forehead. It almost seems to glow with an otherworldly power that terrifies those who gaze upon it. So, Goldie Ann?
Yes?
Join me as we go underground within the mists of South Carolina to look for the Third Eye Man.
It's interesting. I mean, when you think of Third Eye, you think of psychic powers, premonitions, things like that. But an actual Third Eye?
The Third Eye does have a lot of connotations with the spiritual awakening and being able to see and affect the spiritual world. Our story begins with Chapter 1, The Sewer Man. This elusive figure, known as the Third Eye Man, made his first appearance on the sprawling campus of the University of South Carolina. Here is a vast expanse of green grass and towering oak trees stretching out in every direction. There are historic brick buildings and modern glass structures scattered throughout the university and the campus. During the day, students walked briskly along the sidewalks, their backpacks slung over their shoulders, while others relaxed on benches or play frisbee on the expansive lawns. Little do any of these know, that this would be a day, November 12, 1949, that would be etched in the memories of all those who witnessed the strange occurrence. It was an odd event that was about to unfold before them, leaving its mark on the history of the University of South Carolina. The school records indicate a very peculiar occurrence. According to the report, an unidentified man in a gleaming silver outfit was spotted prying open a rusted manhole cover on the corner of Sumter and Green Streets. This location stands directly across from the grand historic Long Street Theater on the campus, adding to the eerie nature of the event. According to witnesses, they reported feeling fear as they watched the man's strange actions unfold before them. It was at 10:43 p.m., and two students stood out into the cold night air, their breaths forming small clouds before them. The sound of dripping water from a recent rain echoed through the quiet streets, adding to the atmosphere. They had just left the theater, and they noticed something moving along the street, in and out of the streetlights. Both watched with equal parts fear and fascination as they saw a tall figure emerge from the shadows and make its way towards the sewer manhole cover in the street. Despite the darkness that cloaked it, they could make out its broad shoulders and imposing stature, giving off danger and mystery. The street lights shined off of a silver outfit, or possibly its own skin. With an almost otherworldly determination, the figure strode forward, his movements fluid and purposeful. The man did not seem to notice or be bothered by the onlookers. He reached the rusted metal cover embedded into the road and with seemingly little effort lifted it open despite its weight. The metallic screech echoed through the air, a stark contrast to the otherwise silent surroundings. It was clear that this was not an ordinary feat of strength for any mere mortal. With deft movements and honed skills, this silver-clad man vanished into the sewer's yawning opening, disappearing from sight into the darkness below. The faint sound of metal scraping against asphalt rippled through the desolate street as he adeptly replaced the manhole cover behind him, erasing all evidence of his presence without a trace. The two students stood in utter shock, their bodies frozen in place as they tried to process what they had just witnessed. The man before them had revealed a hidden world beneath the city streets, and they could only imagine the secrets that lay within its depths. The image of this silver man's disappearance lingered in their minds, leaving an eerie feeling of mystery and wonder in its wake. One of the two eyewitnesses was Christopher Nichols, a bright-eyed student who would graduate in 1953. And in the days following his encounter, Christopher eagerly wrote an article for the school paper, The Gamecock. So now, with the bizarre incident firmly in his mind, he relayed the latest news about this mysterious figure that had been causing quite a stir amongst the students, the infamous Sewer Man. Christopher's article was like a spark, igniting a fire of excitement and intrigue amongst his student peers. The air around the campus was charged with curiosity as each person began to gossip with their peers to hear more about this stranger. After the article's publication, mentioning his very name sparked rumors throughout the school. Christopher's words vividly depicted this unusual figure, leaving readers hungry for more information. It was as if his silvery form and peculiar actions were everywhere. Stories spread throughout the students and faculty alike, sparking rumors and wild accusations that would endure for decades to come. The campus was abuzz with a sense of mystery and unease as this Sewer Man seemed to be able to materialize out of thin air and disappear just as quickly, leaving any observers questioning their own eyes. People were afraid he could appear out of anywhere. Slowly but surely, as the days turned into weeks, the townspeople's curiosity and fascination with the Sewer Man began to wane. The initial buzz and excitement surrounding his activities faded, leaving only a lingering memory of the mysterious stranger who lurked beneath their feet. As time passed, he became just another insignificant blip in their busy lives, hardly even worth a passing thought. Chapter 2. Mutilated Chicken. Nearly 6 months had passed when on a warm spring day in 1950, on April 7th, the figure of the Sewer Man was once again sighted. His silver body emerged from the shadows and prowled through the campus, haunting the memory of those who had caught glimpses of him before. This time, it would be as a university police officer who was making his rounds. He couldn't help but notice something was out of the ordinary behind the Long Street Theater. There was a distinct scent of death filling his nose as he approached the loading dock. There, a gruesome scene awaited. The bodies of two chickens lay motionless on the ground. Their feathers and body parts were scattered about. The officer's stomach churned at the sight, a mixture of disgust and curiosity taking hold.
Probably hunger.
Sorry. I don't have a feeling that seeing raw chicken guts all over the place is very appetizing.
Fried chicken.
It wasn't fried.
I want some fried chicken.
It wasn't fried. But the campus officer carefully stepped over the debris to get a closer look, trying to piece together what could have caused such carnage on this quiet campus. As he approached the scattered bits of chicken, He couldn't help but feel a sense of disgust wash over him. It was a chaotic scene, as if a wild party had been abruptly abandoned by its revelers. His mind raced with possibilities. Perhaps it was the work of a fraternity student or some other group of pranksters. He shook his head in frustration and turned to make his way back to his patrol car, already dreading the paperwork involved in reporting this mess. As his voice crackled over the radio, the officer turned back to the loading dock and was met with a surprising sight. Now, a silver figure was crouched over the pile of chicken guts.
What?
Its metallic sheen glinting in the dim light. The officer cautiously approached, his hand resting on his holster as he tried to make sense of the situation. Was this some kind of wild art project gone wrong? Or perhaps an alien creature drawn to the smell of poultry? He couldn't be sure, but he knew he must proceed cautiously. In a sudden movement, the officer flicked on his flashlight, illuminating the eerie figure of a man crouched on the ground amidst the scattered chicken. The being's eyes lifted from the gruesome scene to meet the cop's wide-eyed stare. For a moment, the air was thick with the stench of raw meat and blood, as the sewer man's unkempt appearance only added to the unsettling atmosphere.
That's really disgusting, because the smell of raw chicken is gross.
And the officer agreed. And his grip tightened on the gun as he cautiously approached the stranger, unsure of what he might do next. His stomach dropped as the light of his flashlight swept over the man's face. It had a distorted, almost inhuman appearance, with skin that seemed to be pulsing with sickly shades of silvery gray. But what caught the police officer's attention most was the small, perfectly circular third eye staring back at him from the center of the man's forehead. It watched the cop, unblinking, as if taunting the officer with its presence. The police officer felt like it was looking into his very soul, and he stumbled back, his eyes wide with horror, and he quickly returned to the radio to call for backup, unable to bear the thought of facing this creature alone. Its very presence seemed to emit an otherworldly aura that made his skin crawl and his heart race. His stomach churned at the thought of having to return to the loading dock, and he hesitated. But when he did return, his gaze fixated on an empty space where, just minutes before, there had been the pair of lifeless chickens and the third-eyed man. Everything was now gone.
So he's just seeing things?
Well, if not for the two students who saw it before, possibly.
Yeah.
And you're right, as more officers arrived on the scene, they found nothing but scattered feathers and a few bones, a grim reminder of what transpired. There was an eerie silence that now filled the air enough to frighten any man. The poor cop, who had the unfortunate luck of witnessing the third-eyed man, was in a complete state of utter hysteria. His mind couldn't comprehend what he had just seen, and his frantic attempts to convince his fellow officers fell on deaf ears. Everything he said was held in disbelief. The image of that third eye was burned into his memory, haunting him like a nightmare that just couldn't be shaken off.
Almost like a pun. It was burned into his head. Yeah. So why didn't they just go down and check out the tunnels?
I have an answer for that.
Okay.
And it's part of Chapter 3, The Tunnels. It is now the late 1960s, a time of rebellion and exploration. The university's catacombs, a labyrinth of underground tunnels, were now a beloved student hideout.
Huh.
These winding passages would serve as a secret network connecting every corner of the campus, and acted as a haven for those who would seek adventure or escape the constraints of academic life. The air below was musty and cool in the catacombs, with faint echoes of laughter and whispers bouncing off the walls. Student graffiti adorned the rough stone surfaces, remnants of the past visitors leaving their mark on this hidden world.
So rude.
It was their way of rebelling against the 1960s strictness. For many students, these tunnels represented a sense of freedom and independence, symbolizing their defiance against authority. It was a place to gather, dream, and make memories that would last a lifetime. But under the full moon of an early October, one boisterous group of fraternity brothers gathered together to embark on a daring adventure. With three new pledges in tow, they descended into the dark, mysterious tunnels beneath the campus. Here, the air was heavy with an earthy smell, and there was the sound of dripping water echoing through the walls. As the group walked deeper into the unknown, their hearts beat faster with anticipation and fear. The dim lights of their flashlights flickered against the damp walls, casting eerie shadows in every direction. With determined steps, the group of students leading the pledges descended into the dark tunnels below Gambrel Hall. As they made their way deeper, they headed west towards the Horseshoe, which is a portion of the tunnels beneath the U-shaped clusters of buildings at the heart of the university. The only light was from their flashlights and threatened to fail at any moment, but they pressed on, eager to discover what lay ahead in the depths of the tunnels. Police reports later would state that as they rounded the first corner of the Horseshoe, their eyes fell upon a figure that seemed to have been plucked straight out of a surrealist painting. The man was clad in what was described as a shimmering silver suit. His movements stiff and awkward, as if he was a marionette controlled by some unseen force. His haggard appearance gave the impression of someone who had faced great hardships but refused to be broken by them. By the fraternity member's own description, it was, quote, a crippled-looking man dressed all in silver. Without any warning, though, the silver man charged at the students with a lead pipe in hand, all three eyes filled with frenzied rage. The frat pledges felt a surge of fear as they realized that this was not part of their initiation or any harmless prank. The glint of the metal pipe in the flashlight beam caught their attention, and they could see the intensity in the being's face as he ran towards them, his bare feet pounding against the damp cement. They scrambled to get away from the oncoming threat, their hearts racing and minds reeling with confusion and terror. Each pledge attempted to reach the exit to the catacombs ahead of the attacker's onslaught. A Matthew Tabor, a lanky pledge with messy brown hair and glasses, stumbled backward as the creature lunged at him. His back hit the ground hard, causing him to let out a startled yelp. As he scrambled to get up, he noticed minor cuts on his hands and arms from the creature's nails.
Dang.
He was also shaking uncontrollably, his heart racing as he tried to process what had just happened to him. The other boys rushed over to help him up, their faces filled with concern for their injured brother. Grabbing him, they all managed to escape the attack with only minor cuts and minor shock. As soon as they reached the surface, two of the older boys raced to the police department. They pushed past the heavy doors and breathlessly gave the chief their account of the chilling encounter. Word of the strange sighting spread through the university, and there was a palpable tension that began to build, mingled with the undercurrent of excitement. This is when the first Third Eye manhunt had officially started, and everyone was on edge exploring the tunnels.
How long after the first group of kids that saw him in the manhole?
About 10 years.
Okay. Right.
This is now 10 years after the first encounter.
Okay, I missed that part. Right.
Everyone was eagerly awaiting any updates or clues that could lead them to this mysterious figure in the tunnels. After painstakingly combing through the dark, twisting tunnels, which seemed like for hours, the police emerged with nothing to show for their efforts. Despite their best attempt and exhaustive searching, no clue or lead could be found in the abandoned maze beneath the campus streets. It was as if the Third Eye Man had vanished into the shadows, leaving only questions and a growing sense of frustrations for the detectives on the case. It was even rumored that he must be aware of even deeper tunnels, unknown to any of the university's faculty or staff. After this incident, the police took extensive precautions after the attack, sealing off the tunnels for most of the entrances and declaring them off limits to all individuals, whether students or faculty members. In fact, they are still closed today for concerns of safety. With the Third Eye Man still loose, there was a sense of fear in the air, as if danger lurked around every corner and beneath every manhole cover. The once bustling underground passageways are now eerily silent, a stark contrast to the usual hustle and bustle of the university life above ground. The tunnels are now empty and void, except for the possibility of one lone inhabitant, a being dressed all in silver with a third eye in the middle of his head, the Third Eye Man.
So is that something that's true, that there's tunnels underneath this university?
There are officially tunnels underneath the university, and there you can actually get to the entrances, like I said, at the theater, at the state house. There's an entrance over by the river. There are tunnels that underneath that were used for keeping the campus warm.
Can anybody go?
No. Okay. Like I said, they are all been locked and secured for safety reasons, officially. No one will admit that it's because of fear of the Silver Man or the Third Eye Man coming out, but you cannot access those tunnels now.
Dang.
Although the students who still support the school paper, the Gamecock, still continue telling the stories of the Third Eye Man and still make attempts to give tours, at least to the very beginning parts of the tunnels. So you never know what might lead into it. In fact, that's why I was looking through YouTube to see if anyone had done any investigations actually into the tunnels, but I couldn't find any.
I would love to do one.
I'm sure it would be pretty intense. And as one of the maintenance men who has been working for the university for decades once said, "We don't use the tunnels unless it is absolutely necessary."
No explanation why.
No. The tunnels are rarely mentioned, but their existence is known amongst those who work on the campus. And the labyrinthine in nature, twisting and turning beneath the campus grounds like a secret network of hidden passages. No one has fully mapped out where they go. Despite the entrances being locked down, there are still numerous sightings reported during the late 80s and the early 90s, although the university police dismisses their sightings.
Of course they do.
Some claim to have seen a silver-dressed figure roaming the tunnels or climbing in and out of the manhole entrances. And despite efforts to debunk these sightings, they continue to persist, leaving an eerie atmosphere on the campus. So, for the daring adventurer souls, whoever dare to descend into the dark winding tunnels below, there is a looming threat of punishment from the school authorities. They can be suspended from classes or expelled.
Wow.
These rule breakers would have to risk it all for the thrill of exploration and discovery.
I'd do it.
Well, every step would take them into the forbidden abyss, and the consequences become more real and dangerous. Despite the strict policies against it, any curious students who find their way into the catacombs beneath the university risk the possibility of coming face to face with the ominous Third Eye Man, his piercing gaze watching them from the darkness, even as they quickly turn and flee back to the surface.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
And now you know the story of the Third Eye Man.
Yes, I do.
But before we end this episode, I want to remind you that we are active on social media and would be thrilled to hear your opinion about the Third Eye Man. Don't hesitate to share your stories and opinions with us. You can reach us on our social media, such as Facebook, Within the Mist Podcast, or on Instagram. We even have an email at withinthemistpodcast@gmail.com for any of you who would like to share. We hope you enjoyed our story about the Third Eye Man. Come back next week for another story about cryptids, ghosts, or mysteries. In the meantime, watch for shadows in underground tunnels and remain constantly curious. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, guys.